I'm very pleased to have a guest to talk about some really interesting avenues of music with today, Graham Shields. So nice for you to join me and talk about your busy week ahead.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This week, I'm getting ready for a concert at the Millwood United Methodist Church as part of the Millwood series. It's a program entirely of organ music and of my organ music. It's going to be about an hour long, and part of the program will also include a little buildable organ that our local American Guild of Organists chapter is renting from an organ builder in Windsor, Ontario.
Okay.
Yeah.
We will just, let's back up and figure out how all of these things began to appeal to you as a young musician. I'm curious about your sort of international background, a little time in Canada, as well as in Minnesota. So where to begin?
Yeah, well, I was born in Kenora, Ontario. My whole family's Canadian. But when I was five, my dad took a job just temporarily in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, working at a paper mill. And we just thought we'd live there for 2, maybe 3 years. And we ended up staying there over a decade. So,
Christ, yeah.
You know, and I ended up getting my undergrad at University of Minnesota Duluth. And I just feel like I've slowly been making my way south.
Very, you know, you have to make more progress.
I've got a long way to go. Yeah.
So tell me about how musical your family is.
My dad played clarinet, I think, in high school. But otherwise, my mom is an elementary music teacher. And she also has a pretty big piano studio. And she accompanies the local community chorus in town. And, you know. So she was kind of a driving force for me. And I've got two younger brothers who are also musical in kind of forcing us to all take piano lessons. And eventually we loved music the way that she does. And so music was always a big, important focus for our family pretty much for as long as I can remember. So, yeah.
What about writing music?
Yeah, I don't know how that happened because my mom hates, she remembers having to take a couple courses in college where she had to write music. She didn't like it at all. So I don't really know how I got interested in it. I started just writing, you know, I guess you'd call them pop songs. And I'm not really sure how that happened, but I just, you know, I guess my tastes got, my tastes developed and I started, I guess it was a little insatiable. I was looking for odder and odder thrills, if, you know. I mean, starting with pop songs and then moving on to just, you know, maybe like music that sounds a little bit like Debussy and writing for instruments and there was no text and, you know, and now doing things like maybe you'll hear in a little bit that are outside of having a tonal center and talking more about textural developments and things like that rather than focusing on any specific pitch. So, yeah.
Sometimes schools are, you know, well known because they offer a very set and rigid path to turn out a kind of a performer or composer, I guess. But did you have to be careful about how you planned your education in order to continue with your interests?
Sure. That's a great question. Yeah, I did my undergrad at University of Minnesota Duluth, and I loved the program. I think also because it was an undergraduate experience and not a graduate level experience that might have also influenced the trajectory that I'm on right now, which is when I was in my undergrad, a lot of the stuff that I was writing was a lot more conservative, which isn't good or bad, it's just how it was. And I think when I started getting interested in experimenting a little bit more, I looked at the program at Western Michigan, and I saw what Lisa Kunz and Chris Biggs are doing, and I thought, oh, this is really interesting, and I feel like I could learn so much because I didn't get, it was just a different education. I didn't get a lot of that type of direction in my undergrad, and I was looking for something like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Lisa Kunz and Chris Biggs represent a whole new frontier in sound and music and how to think about composing. So at this, you know, while that sounds like freedom is great, but it could also be a big challenge to find, well, what is my direction in this frontier, you know?
Absolutely. And I think it's also been kind of kind of a fun challenge, maybe not so fun all the time, but to try and hold on to these things in music that I value, but also make it accessible to, I like to call them sidewalk people, people who are not musically trained or people who maybe took piano lessons in elementary school and never picked up an instrument again. And trying to find ways to communicate using the values that I, the musical parameters that I value, and trying to reach and speak to them in ways that maybe they're not expecting.
I'm speaking with Graham Shields, who last year graduated with a degree in composition, a master's in composition from Western Michigan University, and will present a program of organ music on the Millwood series. Concert starts at 3:00 at Millwood United Methodist Church in Portage. And it is really exciting to see brand new pieces presented, especially on organ, which has a long history. And, you know, many times organists, you know, learn their Bach and get to, I don't know, Vierne or the mid-century and just like, okay, that's enough. That's plenty. And it kind of is for many.
Yeah.
But to push the instrument forward and to push the repertoire forward, it takes someone who both loves the instrument and loves new music, and I guess you're uniquely qualified.
I suppose so, yeah. I think you're right that a lot of organists kind of stop right around the beginning of the 1900s, or if as far as music that they're interested in playing. And I think part of that is, as I think most humans kind of have a tendency to, at least with music, to hold on to values of the past. And, you know, music is a reactionary art form. And so...
A reaction to the times, you mean?
To the times or other artistic movements. You know, and so I feel like if you look at the trends of architecture or visual art, you'll see that music is following something similar, but not... close behind.
Not in lockstep with that. But
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think...
Isn't that where Baroque gets its name? It's from an architectural feature.
Yeah, and if you look at Baroque architecture, it's really ornamented. There's all kinds of decorations, and if you listen to Baroque music, it's ornamented.
It's sort of reflected that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so because organ is such an old, old instrument, it is steeped in history. Which I think is probably part of the reason why so many people have a tough time. Well, maybe not even a tough time. Maybe they just aren't even aware of its true versatility. It really has the capability of having a, what's the word that I want to use here? Pertinence, I think, to the new music community. You know, specifically because it's such a versatile instrument, and depending what type of organ you're playing on, because there's so many different kinds, no two organs are exactly alike.
Right, they're designed for the space.
Yeah.
By, you know, sometimes very great makers, but makers who were using as much art as they were craft,
yes,
you know, to
yeah.
get it done.
It's a real amalgamation of arts and engineering, and it's, yeah.
So I think an organist told me once that prior to the invention of the computer, you'd have to say the organ was the most complicated invention until that time.
I would agree, especially if you think of the other kinds of inventions that were being invented. I guess because the organ is such an old instrument. If you look at a mechanical action organ, which all that that means is that there's no electronics. Everything is connected by wooden trackers. And the fact that you can, you know, pull a little lever and redirect wind to a different set of organ pipes.
Yeah.
And then that was, you know, an invention that is hundreds and hundreds of years old is kind of amazing.
It really should be embraced by the steampunk community
as I think
the
so.
Instrument that fully represents.
Yes. Yeah. I like that.
A brilliant instrument that, you know, once you decide to take a look, you will realize how amazing the organ is as an invention and as a musical instrument, of course. To repeat, my guest, Graham Shields, performs at 3:00 on Sunday at the Millwood United Methodist Church. It's part of the Millwood series. And details are at your website, grahamshields.com, but you need to know how to spell. It's Graeme. sort of the Celtic way, GrahamShields.com. And we also should forecast out from there, because you're making several appearances with the next little instrument we'll be talking about. Sarkozy Bakery is hosting an Art Hop event on Friday, next Friday at 5 p.m. And you're going to be there too.
And I'll be there too.
Without a full concert organ, but with the instrument we're about to talk about now. Could you introduce us to Orgel Kids?
Orgel Kids, yeah. It's, I was introduced to an Orgel Kids instrument in Houston at a national organ convention. And what it is a tiny two-rank or two sets of pipes organ, all entirely made out of wood or maybe little metal trackers that connect the keys to other parts of the instrument, that can be built in half an hour to maybe an hour and a half, depending on how many people you have helping. And it's perfect for kids 7 through 12, but I find it incredibly interesting. Other adults and seasoned organ builders that I've spoken with love it and find it incredibly interesting. It's a fun educational tool, but it's also an instrument. It's fully playable. And so what we're going to be doing at Sarkozy's is at Sarkozy Bakery is assembling the organ with whoever happens to walk in, and then we'll play around and then we'll take it apart again and assemble it for the next group of people. And it's, I think, for people who already don't know what, you know, maybe they know what an organ is, but they haven't heard one or seen one. And even for people who do know, even for some organists, don't know how an organ really works. And so it's just a really fun and exciting way to get a real hands-on experience with an instrument that is usually up in the back of a church.
Yeah. And there's, you know. It seems like it was been there since the dawn of time.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Before this thing is assembled, it's in a box. What? You open up a box and it's just full of wooden parts?
Yeah. So I actually haven't seen the instrument yet. I pick it up on Friday.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah, thank you. but from what I'm meant to understand, this specific instrument that I'm picking up is going to be in a I'm grabbing it from the organ builder, and to really train me how to put his instrument together. I'm going to meet him at his house, and he's going to give me the box and say, all right, put it together, just to make sure that I can do it.
Oh, wow.
He'll be there to coach me and help me out. And we'll probably do that a couple times, and then he'll send me off with it. So it should fit. I can't remember what the exact dimensions are, but it should fit in the back of my Nissan. I think it should be light enough that I can carry it in its box by myself.
Okay. The maker lives in Windsor.
The maker, his name is Ron Dossenbach. Yeah.
And who came up with the plans for a build-it-yourself small organ?
So I'm going to have a tough time saying her name. I've been in contact with her, but I've never said her name out loud. Her name is Lydia Vrongadovich.
That sounds great. Yeah.
She's in the Netherlands. And in 2009, she thought, hey, you know, we really need some sort of an educational outlet because there's not a lot of children interested in the pipe organ. And it's you know, again, such a versatile instrument. And so she teamed up with Wim Janssen, who's an organ builder there. And together they designed the first Orgel Kids. I think at the time they were calling it the Orgel Kids Do Organ, because you do build it and you do play it. Now there's actually a sister project called Orgel Kids USA, which is located in Oregon, which is a great state to have an organ-related project. I looked to see if there were any organs that are in Michigan and any of these Orgel Kids, and there's not. And so I was really disappointed, and I thought, oh, we might have to. I don't know where we're going to be able to get one. We might have to fly one in or ship it from, you know, the West Coast or something like that. But then I looked in Canada, and I saw that. That this organ builder had actually taken, so you can buy one of these organs already built, or you can do what Ron Dossenbach did, which is they're not really plans, they're more of an outline of how to build this instrument, and it's not like a kit that he was able to, like he built everything from lumber. right? He carved out all the wooden pieces and all the keys and the frame. And so he bought those guidelines and built his own.
It must have taken a couple of months.
I think he said it took 500 hours. So I don't know how those 500 hours were divvied up.
But, wow.
Yeah.
And this organ that comes in a box can be assembled in front of an audience and with help from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can play a whole variety of music on it.
Yeah.
My question, I don't understand how you get the air to blow through this instrument. How does that work?
So there is a pump that attaches to the organ, and it's you can just operate it with your hands. It's these two bellows that you push back and forth, kind of like if you've maybe seen a pump organ before, mm-hmm. and you push on the bellows with your feet. It's a little bit like, I'm told, a little bit like flying a helicopter. You do the same thing with this instrument, except with your hands. So one person can be pumping and the other person can be playing.
So I know a 4-year-old who is extremely drawn to anything mechanical and gears, especially that kind of thing. So I know someone already just perfectly suited to go nuts on this instrument. And a lot of kids will be fascinated, but I think adults too, you get to feel like a kid again. Gives you that opportunity to go back into this world of kind of wonder and thinking it out and seeing something grow in front of your eyes too. I think that's fascinating and a rare opportunity.
Yeah.
For a lot of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you'll have this organ after you pick it up on Friday. It'll be available for people to see and try on mm-hmm. Sunday,
mm-hmm.
as well as at the Art Hop with Judy Sarkozy.
Yeah, the Orgel Kids organ on Sunday will actually be part of the program. I'm going to put a little bit of it together, and I think we're just going to leave it up for people to assemble and disassemble afterwards. So, yeah.
My guest is Graham Shields. His website is grahamshields.com, G-R-A-E-M-E, shields.com. And there's also a website for this organ project that is a great place, a resource.
Yeah. So a lot of the pieces that I'm playing on the program at the Millwood Series were written for a separate endeavor, I guess, that I've been working on with another organist in Madison, Wisconsin, called Vital Organ Project. And that is a pun. That was purposeful.
Vital Organ Project.
Vital Organ. Yeah, right. And we've been focusing on playing music by living composers and trying to play pieces that push the boundaries just a little bit. And so, you know, we have a lot of performances coming up, but, you know, in maybe the interest of staying on track, I think it's just important to note that it exists, and you can also go to vitalorganproject.com and find information on the Millwood Series there, because we are considering it a Vital Organ Project event.
yeah, a lot of brand new music.
Yeah, a lot of brand new music.
Well, let's talk about the program here. Just on the right-hand side, 2018, 2017, 2018, 2016. Wow, there's an old one, 2012.
Yeah,
are so fresh.
Yes, thank you.
So is that what you've been up to this last year or so?
Yeah.
Just focusing on new pieces.
And focusing on new music for organ stuff, especially. It's, you know, so much. There's a lot of organ repertoire. Well, we were talking before about many organists being interested in playing Bach and maybe going as far as Vierne or a couple of other composers who were living into the 1900s. But there's tons of music being written for the organ right now. you know, not all of it is going to be like the stuff that I'm writing. A lot of it is still sounding very reserved, but the fact that new ideas are still being come up with for the instrument, mm-hmm. I think it's a living, breathing instrument. It's not it is old, but it is active.
One thing that is active about it are the American Guild of Organists, and other guilds, international guilds. And I think in some ways organists are shaped by many times their position as a music director at a church, where it falls to them to make services and musical occasions work. So being open to rearrangement, making your own arrangement, working with the forces you have available, you know, as opposed to concert pianists, organists often do create more original music than other kinds.
Yeah, the organist composer was a really, really popular musician type, especially in the Baroque era, right? But organists who are around today, and there's still lots of us. It's not nearly as popular an instrument as it used to be, but by the nature of not all organists work at churches. It does have a life outside of the church, but for organists who do work at churches all the time, they need to be, whenever they play hymns, they need to find different ways to reharmonize the hymns to make it interesting for the congregation. They might take a hymn tune and come up with a little prelude during the service to sort of like homogenize the music within the service. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of, you know, if maybe offertory is going a little bit longer than you meant for it to, you might have to compose a piece or arrange a piece quickly on the spot. Yeah. So I think composing and arranging is a huge part of what many, many organists need to do from a week-to-week basis.
If you just tuned in, my guest is Graham Shields, who will be appearing on Sunday in a program of his own music on the Millwood series at 3 o'clock. It will include Graham performing on the concert organ installed at the space, but also the Orgel Kids instrument will be available to hear and to look at. You're continuing a lot of activity in the next week, reaching out to schools and other educational opportunities, a nice public chance to see the Orgel Kids instrument again is on Friday at Art Hop at Sarkozy Bakery. Well, I want to hear some music here. Let's find a way to talk about that. Your first piece, we don't have a recording of. It's called Again and Again and Again and Again and. And so describe it.
Well, it opens the program, and I don't want to give too much away because I think it's a really fun way to open the program. But there's just a lot of repetitive motions. I think without giving anything away, it'll be really, really clear where the title gets its influence.
Phrasing.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you got me thinking about minimalism there. But who knows? Then a bigger piece. It looks like you put several movements or parts of a suite together for this next, and we'll be hearing parts of or excerpts from a larger piece called Circle Dances.
Yeah.
Where did this start?
So Circle Dances was written, I think it was 2016. Is that what I... No, I have 2017 written
Maybe
on there.
Maybe you kind of put the final touches.
I think that's right, yeah. It's Circle Dances are traditionally carols. Last year, or 2 years ago, I had played, when the piece wasn't quite finished, I had played it at an American Guild of Organists event. So it's a series of, you know, I've got Green Sleeves, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, Eleusine, and a couple of other Christmas and Advent tunes I've arranged. And Carl Doubleday, who's the organist at Millwood, liked those so much that even though this is really not in the Christmas season, or the holiday season even, he said, you know, I'd really, really like it if you could do some of those pieces for the Millwood concert.
Oh, and you can find justification for that too,
yeah.
Because they often started off with different words, different seasons, you know, green sleeves for one. You've provided me with a few short excerpts, teasers, you might say.
Yeah.
Here's an excerpt from God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. Some great harmonizations.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
And some groovy rhythms too.
Yeah, and I think I felt the freedom to to try doing something a little bit outside of what maybe someone would expect for this piece, because it's such a familiar tune to a lot of us.
Yeah. It's a really high bar to, or like a wall to climb, because, you know, the tune, how many composers have already tried to refresh the tune in the last 200 years?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you do?
I think if I had maybe done something similar but had not used a familiar tune, it might be kind of more difficult to listen to, or just not as interesting to a lot of people. And maybe this still isn't very interesting to a lot of people. That's okay. But I think at the very least, you can be like, oh, hey, I recognize that. There's that tune in there. I've never heard it play that way before, you know?
I think you succeeded.
Oh, thank you.
Based on 30 seconds.
Yes, based on 30 seconds. It's a little bit longer than that. But
about how long are the pieces within your Circle Dances set?
Each of them is about, they're short. They're about a minute and a half to 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
So, yeah, tiny little pieces.
Is there a contrasting piece we can excerpt right now?
Oh, Ilesne would be, yes.
This is a French carol. That's delightful.
Well, thanks.
I know the tune.
Yeah.
You're just adding extra beats here and there. It's sparkling. Yeah.
Something else that's going on in that piece that I'm really tickled to be able to include is taking a pencil and jamming it into a key on the organ, on the key desk. If you were listening, you heard maybe a high, high pitch that was going on. I can't be holding that note down and be playing with both hands and my feet. So that pitch, eventually I put a second pencil in there too. So you get a nice major second, and I kind of move around the keyboard so that it's not, those notes are not always, sounding as, this excerpt is, earlier, more near the beginning of the piece. And as it goes on, I move the tune around so that the tune itself still sounds, I guess I'll just say it sounds nice, right? Everything sounds very consonant. But in relationship to that drone that's going on way up at the top of the organ, not so much, right? And then as the piece ends off, we get back towards consonants again. And
some of us in the audience may not have the benefit of hearing that, that super high pitch. But yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
All the teenagers who show up will be like, what is that? Why? Do you have an organ instrument that you are most familiar with? I mean, obviously you can't install one in your apartment or whatever, so you have to, you know, access one.
Yeah, the one that I'm most familiar with right now is the organ on which I work, which is I work at Peace Evangelical Lutheran Church in South Haven, and they have a pretty medium sized organ. It's built by Wix, which is a company in Illinois. And it was built in 1966, I think it was. And so they have a pretty nice organ that the console, or where all of the keys and the pedals are on the instrument, that's movable. So I've done concerts there before where they actually take the console and they push it to the center of the room and turn it around so that you can see what the organist is doing, rather than having them kind of hidden away off to the side, right?
More like a theater organist or something.
Yeah, a little bit like a theater organist. I think that's important in sort of taking the shroud away of what is an organist doing up there, you know?
Yeah. I'm excited to imagine young people, getting in and close up to both the smaller organ that you'll be bringing around, but also, the chance to see a full adult organ where that young person realizes the foot pedals are going and that there are so many, is it ranks where there's one keyboard and then another on top and then buttons to pull and push.
So, yeah, and the organ at Millwood has three different keyboards. And I guess we would call those divisions.
Divisions. Thanks. No, that's
okay. There's so much terminology, and I think even for some organists, it's tough to keep track of. So, So there's three different keyboards, three different divisions, and then another division in the pedals, right? And each of those groupings, each of those divisions have their own ranks, their own sets of sounds, you know, like flutes and strings and trumpets and things like that. So.
How long, I mean, you get to almost, you know, rearrange or have a new look at your pieces when you're deciding how to play them on a different organ like this.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about more than a couple hours of figuring that sort of thing out.
Yeah. Every time, so through that vital organ project that I was talking about before, that organist Tyler Pym and I, we have traveled quite a bit actually to do those concerts. We've been to Colorado and Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan. We're going to Ontario next month. And whenever we go to a new venue, we have to spend, depending on what our pieces are, 4 to maybe 6 hours deciding how we want this organ to speak. You know, we might have written our pieces or practiced a piece that we're playing, by another composer that calls for a specific sound, and maybe the organ that we're going to be performing on doesn't have that specific sound. So we have to figure out what we're going to do to make do.
Rearrange it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So because every organ is a little bit different, every performance is... You know, and you could say the same about pianos, but I think the difference is a lot more substantial from organ to organ, and not just in the sense that the space and the acoustics will affect the piece, but the actual timbres, the actual types of sounds that we're hearing varies from instrument to instrument.
You're listening to a conversation with Graham Shields, a young composer and organist who received a master's in music at Western last year and will perform a recital on Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Millwood United Methodist Church. It starts with a piece called Again and Again and Again and Again, and then we'll hear excerpts from Circle Dances, which we've been checking out a little bit, from Greensleeves to the First Noel and lots in between. Then we hear a piece called Excerpt from Amalgam. And this is a larger piece, so tell me about what your point here was when you were thinking of this work.
So Amalgam is a series of short pieces that I wrote over the summer for a concert that I did at Western at the organ studio, which... has a, I guess, just like this Orgel Kids instrument that we were talking about, is entirely mechanical. So everything is connected by wooden trackers, which means that you can get all kinds of microtones. And there's a piece where I've taken a piece of wood and balanced it on the keyboard and drummed on it. Because it's a mechanical action organ, the touch to the keys is so responsive, whereas an electro-pneumatic organ or an organ that uses electronics as part of the action system wouldn't have quite the same response.
No.
So this excerpt from that suite, The Sounds of Computation, it was the organ that it was performed on. You're meant to half pull all of the stops on the instrument, so you do get a sense of pitch, but because there's so many different clashing overtones, it's more of an effect, rather, you know. But the instrument at Millwood has a really unique aspect, which is that some of the instrument sounds are acoustic; they're actual pipes that air is blowing through, and some of the sounds are actually electronics. And so, because pipes can go out of tune, there is actually a little knob on the organ at Millwood that allows you to tune the electronics. Yeah,
in case it needs to match the mechanical side.
Yeah, the acoustic pipes.
Yeah,
right. Because otherwise, you'll get all these out of tune notes, and you know, for a Sunday morning service, that may not, the congregation might object. So this piece, all I've done is I've taken that tuning knob and turned it all the way down so that it sounds out of tune on purpose. It's not a very long piece, so if it's your least favorite, you'll have to sit through it for just a little bit. It won't be too long.
Hey, it's good exercise. That's right. All of our expectations being unmet can be a kind of thrilling. You're like, wow, I'm so uptight about this. It kind of teaches you things about yourself once in a while.
And I'd also like to think that there may be people who would not hear some of these ideas otherwise, and getting them, getting their butts in seats so that they can be exposed to different types of ideas. I mean, you never know. Someone might go, oh, wow, I didn't know some organs could do that. I really like that idea. I wonder what other types of pieces I can listen to that satisfy a similar kind of interest.
It's true. A lot of people encountering atonal that unpitched music for the first time think, that's cool.
Yeah.
Or that belongs in a horror movie. Yeah. Or, this reminds me of a scary story or a feeling, or, there's no right and wrong response.
Yeah. And I also think the Sounds of Computation piece is kind of funny. It's humorous. So I'm hoping that will also win some listeners over.
Well, Graham, I hope you do. Again, the concert's at 3 o'clock on Sunday, and we're looking at the portion of the program that's on the Millwood United instrument itself, which is a full concert organ. Next piece, Quiet Ascension, has a different sound to it.
Yeah. This piece is, the idea behind it was that, an organ can sustain notes indefinitely. If you hold the note down in the pedals or on the manuals, and if you just keep your finger there, that note will continue sounding in the same dynamic as long as you keep your finger there, versus maybe a piano, right? If you play a note really loudly, it's going to decay, and eventually there will be silence again, right? So the idea behind this piece is that only one note is changing at a time. And so as the performer moves from harmony to harmony, they'll hear a lot of interesting harmonies as we get all of these, since only one note is moving at a time. Is that making sense?
I'm picturing notes being sustained because they won't decay. And so the memory is present of how it began, but where you end up is somewhere new, and yet you can still reference what was happening earlier.
And this is an older piece in the program. It's 2016.
Wow.
I think this will probably be one of the most accessible pieces on the program. It's very tonal. Mm-hmm. But because only one note is changing at a time, rather than lifting all of my fingers off of the keyboard and playing a new harmony and then another new one, moving slowly from one note to the next.
Are you familiar with a piece by Arvo Pärt called "The Cantus in Memory of Benjamin Britten"?
No, I know Arvo Pärt, but no, I don't know that piece.
It's not for organ. Okay. It's for strings, which can also sustain.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, it turns out it's just a series of A minor scales at different speeds, all on top of each other, and it all sustains throughout, and the effect is it reminds me of how you were describing Quiet Ascension. Lovely piece. Graham Shields is my guest, and the concert is 3 o'clock at the Millwood United Methodist Church in Portage. Details are at vitalorganproject.com. Your personal website is grahamshields.com. And as we're following the program itself, the next piece is Melody for Organ. And you were saying the last piece was goes back a ways, but this goes back the furthest, 2012.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is actually the very first piece that I wrote for organ.
Really?
It is, yeah. And so I wrote that while I was an undergrad. And the whole reason I got interested in organ is because my composition teacher is also an organist. And so he just pulled me over one day after composition seminar and said, hey, you want to take organ lessons? And I said, I don't know. And he said, okay, I'll see you next week. And, and I think part of that is probably because his organ studio was kind of small. A lot of organ studios are kind of small. There's not a lot of people interested in the organ right now. But I had never, before my first lesson with him, I had never gotten so close to an organ that I could touch one before. And so I just picked up on it right away, and I fell in love with the instrument immediately. This very first piece is, it's in the spot that it's in on the program for a reason, because right afterwards is the Orgel Kids instrument, and then to sort of break up the program a little bit, and then following is the newest piece that I've just finished actually a couple days ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
We are close to the end of the hour, but I do want to talk about something you've been alluding to a little bit. The organ community is strong but small, and it seems to me, just where I sit, not being an organist, but talking to members of that community, you're in special company. Okay, the fact that the mechanics fascinates you, plus the art fascinates you. I think some of my favorite conversations have turned out to be with organists because of how much is going on in their heads. There's must be a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
you know, when you get a chance to have conversations with other organists.
I think because and we've touched on a lot of this stuff already, but I think because the organ itself is so the instrument itself is in a mix of art and math and engineering, and then there's, you know, we haven't even started talking about the repertoire yet and the history of the instrument and its importance in the church and in communities, and I think it just has such a rich history that there is a lot to talk about.
And the fact that you're bringing Orgel Kids to Kalamazoo for the very first time, this is an initiative to familiarize anyone at any age with an instrument that seems, you know, too large and complex to access.
And I think also some people maybe it's intimidating. It's big. It's complicated, like you said, but. I think also people maybe think, it's only associated with church and I'm not interested in church, or maybe you are really interested in church, but your church doesn't even have an organ. You know, they're big, expensive instruments, so not every church does.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of roadblocks. Some are better reasons than others for some people, but I think just getting the instrument out there, making it more accessible, whether that be turning a console around for a performance so people can see what's going on up there, or bringing a buildable organ to a community where kids and adults alike can put an instrument together and play it, makes it seem not so intimidating anymore.
You seem to have a lot of confidence that you're going to be able to pick this up on Friday
and
build it and then take it apart and build it again.
I've done a lot of research, and I have seen the different models being used in Houston and in Montreal. So I haven't put one together entirely by myself.
So what does this so-called kids instrument actually sound like?
Oh, I think I might have actually sent you a little recording. Yeah.
Well, keep talking, and I'll see if I can find it.
Okay, it should be, well, it'll sound like a flute. The pipes are all wooden. The whole instrument's wooden. And so as the air, when you're using the hand pump, as the air passes through the instrument and into the pipe, it'll basically sound like a wooden recorder.
I think I may have missed our opportunity to put it on the radio.
Well, then, you know, if you really want to hear what it sounds like, you should come to Millwood this Sunday at 3 p.m. to hear what the instrument's going to sound like, and or to Sarkozy Bakery.
That's right.
On October 5th.
Wooden and flutey sounds interesting to me.
Yeah.
And harmonious, right?
Absolutely.
How big is the scale? Scale, like octave and a half? Or?
The keyboard is an octave and a half. And then I mentioned that there's two ranks of pipes, two sets of pipes. That first set of pipes, when you press a note, let's say you press a C, it'll sound a C. The second rank, if you have that on also, you press a C and you'll hear that C, but you'll also hear a C an octave higher.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's just lifts everything up an octave.
It's on the octave.
Yes.
Just like certain accordions work. Like
yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Could you use it as a folk instrument of some kind?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's not a very old instrument. The Orgel Kids instrument. I know some music has been written for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's quite as versatile as, you know, a piano or a full-size organ. But absolutely, I don't think there's any reason it could be any less of an instrument than I'm trying to think of like toy pianos or mm-hmm. or kazoos or not to I hope those comparisons don't lower the
It could do everything.
It can.
Did you say, I forgot, I wasn't listening carefully enough, did you say it has chromatic keys? Like mm-hmm. you can go any the white and black
white keys. And black keys.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's very versatile.
I think there's 45 pipes altogether.
Okay, how much does one of these things cost?
Ooh, that's a great question because it also depends on how you're going to get it. You know, if you buy one of the organs outright, it may depend on where you're going to be buying it from. But if you commission an organ builder to, you know, grab the plans from the Netherlands and make them him or herself, then you know where they get the materials from and how long they need to spend building it. It could range from it'll be a couple $1,000s.
Yeah. Yeah, not, time, effort, materials.
Not like a big organ, which is much more expensive, but yeah, a couple $1,000s.
Yeah, that's great. Orgel Kids is the project, and the Orgel Kids instrument will be available to listen to, check out, and even play on Sunday at 3 o'clock when Graham Shields presents a concert on the Millwood series. It's at the Millwood United Methodist Church, and full details are at vitalorganproject.com. And following that, if you're around for Art Hop a week from this Friday on October 5th, you'll be set up at Sarkozy Bakery for a really up close and personal look at the Orgel Kids instrument. And of course, you'll be demonstrating, playing music. And
absolutely.
Like, okay, great. Yeah. Okay, well, let's save the best for last, or the mind bending part for last, because you're closing your recital with your newest piece called "And Music Shall Untune the Sky," and it's in quotes. Did that come from a piece of literature?
It did, and actually, it's the second to last piece. The last piece is
That's right. There it is.
That's okay. But yeah, this piece that you're talking about, I'd say is the most important one on the program, because I wrote it specifically for the instrument at Millwood. And it's called "And Music Shall Untune the Sky" because it's from a John Dryden poem, who was an English poet who lived from 1631 to 1700. And the poem is called "A Song for St. Cecilia's Day." And St. Cecilia is the patron saint of music. And
That's right.
Right.
Was he saying it in a sense of loss or regret, "And music shall untune the sky"?
It's actually it's a darker poem than I really wanted it to be. But it's that specific stanza that line comes from is sort of about the end of times and things like that. Yeah.
Wow. Some things to think about.
Some things to think about.
Eternity and such. Okay. What did you set yourself a goal to mm-hmm. write a piece specific to this instrument. Mm-hmm. And we're about to hear an excerpt from it, the first untune excerpt. Does that come from one of the movements?
Yeah, the very first line of the first stanza is "From harmony, from heavenly harmony, this universal frame began."
Okay, let's not set it up any further. Okay. Listeners, hold on. This will unsettle some of you, but hang on and enjoy the ride. You really did it, Graham. You untuned that sky very effectively. Wow. Okay, let's break it down a tiny bit while we have a couple minutes left.
Sure.
The rattle.
Mm-hmm.
There was a mechanical rattle going on.
So the piece, that movement opens up with two notes that I'm holding on the pedals, and the pedals have really, really long pipes. And I guess that they are loud enough that they are actually shaking the...
in their own...
Yeah, they're rattling their casings, I think is what it is.
Wow.
But I kind of, you know, at first I was like, oh, I don't know if I like that. But actually, I think it's kind of cool.
And it's so related to the moment, what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It is so disorienting to hear a beautiful major chord. And then it starts to slide by microtones to mm-hmm. another chord and still stay a major chord at the same time.
And I agree. But I also think that when we get back to those major chords, when everything's perfectly in tune, I think we really, really appreciate it. And it sounds so much more pure and rewarding. Yeah?
Well, you're a cool composer, Graham.
Thank you.
And I look forward to your program on Sunday at 3:00. Details at vitalorganproject.com. And you can see lots more information and upcoming performances there that you're involved in. It's been a great hour. Thank you, Graham.
Thank you for having me.
And don't let me forget to remind listeners, Art Hop on Sarkozy Bakery's October 5th presentation, and you'll be able to see the new Orgel Kids instrument, Graham Shields. Thanks again.
Information.
Inspiration.
This is WMUK Kalamazoo, serving you from Western Michigan University.